news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is about 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Guess we had a winner of our tickets, right, Dan?
We did. Congratulations to Paul picking up a pair of tickets to see what should be a really cool show, the tribute to Jimmy Buffett, Keep the Party Going, featuring the Coral Reefer Band. Again, that show August 1st, which is a Thursday at the Wharf Amphitheater, and tickets go on sale tomorrow morning at Ticketmaster.com. So you don't want to miss that and get in early because, of course, we know anything having to do with Jimmy Buffett is going to draw quite the crowd in our area.
Sure.
And with Will Kimbrough participating as well from Mobile, and as some of you have pointed out on the text line, of course, he's really well known around here, Will and the Bushmen and everything like that. So looking forward to that show, and thanks to everyone for calling in this week and trying to win. We'll talk with Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, later in the second half of the hour. But have you seen, okay, let me lay the stage for you here. The back and forth over, I don't know, how long do you think this back and forth has been going on? Maybe a year, maybe longer, well, between the Alabama political reporter and 1819 News?
You know what, it seemed really, and I might be wrong about this, but it did not bubble up big time when the guy that was the mayor,
Bubba Copeland,
in East Alabama, mm-hmm. and he had an online presence as someone dressing up as a woman, and when 1819 News ran that story, after a lot of,
it was intense.
They considered all factors. They were like, okay, we have what we have here. We have this story about this guy. Do we go with it?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff was saying the fact that the guy was a two things. He was a well known as a preacher mm-hmm. in Smith Station, and also which is outside of Phoenix City, and he was also the mayor.
Right.
And so his church may have been in Phoenix City, and he's the mayor. Who was the mayor of Smith City anyway? With considering all that, they thought, well, he's a public figure. We've got this story. Why would we not run it?
Yeah, and it wasn't just about him privately dressing as a woman,
right.
but he was writing erotic, yep. violent erotic fiction.
Really weird stuff.
Involving the names of people locally.
Yes.
And including pictures of local children, which yep. he eventually took down. So, But the national media takes this story and
he killed himself,
right,
of course.
He killed himself. So it's tragic, awful situation. 1819 News was doing their jobs as journalists, and I 100% backed them the whole way through. But
and like I say, though, also, they slowed down. They didn't just jump on the story like they couldn't wait to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
They thoughtfully considered all of the edges of the story and editorially came to the conclusion it's a story.
Mm-hmm. Where it became a real, because not only did the national media,
the liberal
national media started blaming 1819 News more or less.
But for his death.
They weren't as obviously blaming 1819 News for the death of this mayor, but Alabama Political Reporter sure was.
Yes.
And they used that and they wrote story after story about how evil 1819 News is and that this was just some sweet mayor who dressed up as a woman on occasion and it didn't have to go this far and blah, blah, blah. So they took the role of the moral superior in that, right?
Right.
And it even bubbled up again here this last couple weeks when everyone, which we have yet to discuss on Mobile Mornings, was talking about the, I'll just say it, the incredibly obese winner of that beauty pageant.
Mm-hmm.
And 1819 News was writing, hey, you know, this, they're passing her off as the real Miss Alabama, but this is kind of a different, you know, I didn't follow the story that closely. I have my own opinions on the whole thing, which I'm not scared to say. I think she could be the sweetest person in the world. Maybe she's an incredible person to be around. But as far as the children, I don't think that making someone who is that obese a beauty role model mm-hmm. is the best thing, right? But I'm not heated over it like so many people seem to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, 1819 starts writing about that too, and Alabama political reporter starts going after them again and calling them, you know, saying they're the worst people in the world.
Right, you're on the wrong side of the street on this on this issue again.
Right, the wrong side of history.
Again, you're way wrong. Again, you're bigoted.
And they use that as an opportunity to re-reference the Bubba Copeland story.
Right, right.
They've already caused one suicide. So anyway, fast forward to an article yesterday from Craig Monger at 1819 News. And I guess, you know, it's fair to say that I am or had been ignorant of a lot of the way that local news, statewide news, the players that are involved in this. And you kind of have an idea that, you know, the big players in the state. And we saw a lot of this with the Matrix scandal, the PR firm, more or less, that entities hire to make stories go away or lessen the impact of bad stories for certain companies.
Right.
And how that's all been tied in the past to different websites across the state. And it's no secret on the national scale, on the state scale, that people will pay big money and for quote unquote advertising. But what they're really paying for is for whoever the commentators are to take it easy on them. Hey, maybe you let this story slide and we send you this check and we'll call it advertising. But the deal is you don't go as hard on us as you could.
Yeah, not just take it easy on us on some stories. Maybe promote us a little bit. You know, where and when you can promote our organization or get a little fluff piece on the good work we do in the community or things like that. And you'll see that from time to time. And you should wonder, why is this news agency talking about this group doing good in the community when a lot of people do some good in the community and don't give any shout outs?
Right.
And then look back at the company itself or the powerful entity that it may be. Mm-hmm. And then you're starting to answer the question.
So yeah, when I started hearing about these different state media companies and how much money's coming to them from top down, I was surprised coming into this media game. But back to this article, Craig Monger. So let me just read some of this to you. He says, in a Republican-run state, one might be surprised to find tens of thousands of dollars flowing to progressive left-wing media sites. And he's referencing Alabama Political Reporter here, which, you know, I've been reading the Political Reporter for a long time. They haven't always been as outright, well, I should say as out-left as they are. They haven't been this far left. Maybe centrist, maybe a little left, but it's almost like reading a straight-up progressive
newspaper
sometimes now. Bill and Susan Britt, and of course Josh Moon, maybe their lead editorialist, and you can see him on The V on Fox on weekend mornings. And I tried watching this last episode on their website, and I'm like, oh my gosh, who is tuning into this? It's terrible. But anyway,
they used to be guests with Jeff.
Yeah. Bill Britt used to come on with Sean a lot, too.
Bill Britt would come on with Sean, also with Jeff. I think
Josh Moon was
a guest with Jeff.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's been a bit of a split here. So they said the front page canvas, this is Monger's writing, the front page canvas is typically filled with the musings of Bill Britt and Josh Moon. Their topics range, but tend to focus on a single theme. Conservatives are bad. That has definitely been the case here over the last couple years. Let's see. One might expect such a media entity in a blood-red state to find scant financial support from state agencies, financially enabled Republican politicians, but you'd be wrong. So, you know, of course, we're a very red state. The politicians are very conservative. But what Monger points out here is a lot of money from state agencies is flowing directly to the Alabama Political Reporter for advertising. He said in fiscal year 2024 alone, which began in October of last year and runs till September of this year, state agencies have paid nearly $95,000 to the Alabama Political Reporter for advertising. $12,700 of that from the Secretary of State's office, almost $18,000 from the Department of Corrections, over $63,000 from ALDOT. All of that to APR just since October. They said throw in another $3,000 from the State Port Authority, and the total approaches nearly $100,000. And that's quite different from the money that was flowing from state agencies to APR even just last year, where $17,000 went to APR, $37,000 the year before. Last year, the Secretary of State paid $7,500, and the Alabama Industrial Training Institute paid almost $10,000 in advertising to APR. What's weird here is AL.com received $192,000 from state agencies in fiscal year 2023.
Considered advertising money?
Considered advertising money. This fiscal year, AL.com has received only $13,000.
So
a lot of the money that was going to AL.com from state agencies has been shifted and is going to the Alabama Political Reporter. And this is where, you know, you start seeing some facts here in Craig Monger's story, or maybe some interesting things that have happened since they started getting this money. Monger says, in the case of ADOC, the Political Reporter has historically been hypercritical of the Department of Corrections and its policies, often blasting out opinion pieces criticizing ADOC for lies, corruption, and any number of perceived misbehaviors. Nearly every news story about an Alabama execution before May of this year mentioned either the ongoing Department of Justice lawsuit against ADOC, the state's failed lethal injections, or any number of criticisms of the Department of Corrections. However, after the Department of Corrections cut APR a check in May, the following story on the execution of Jamie Ray Mills lacked any discussion of the DOJ lawsuit or the botched executions. Monger says it lacked any critical insight on the Department of Corrections or the state's position on capital punishment, which you could basically find in every APR story previously about the prison system or about executions. Said instead, APR staff writers opined on the global landscape of capital punishment. As for ALDOT, which is APR's largest contributor by a significant margin, to say the coverage has been flowery is an understatement. June of last year, ALDOT Director John Cooper was arrested on a misdemeanor charge.
We all know that. Intimidation. We all remember that.
Right. And he's also the subject, or was the subject, of that lawsuit over the toll bridge in Baldwin County. He says, what was the extent of APR's coverage? A 150-word story, which is very short, describing a property dispute over an easement. There was no mention of Cooper threatening to shoot the neighbor, and there were no follow-up stories after the shooting threats became widely known. Instead, 8 minutes after the mild story of Cooper's arrest was posted online, APR's own Bill Britt published a glowing opinion piece praising Cooper. An op-ed headlined, "Where Will John Cooper Go to Get His Reputation Back?" Monger says Britt espouses nearly 1,000 words in a ham-handed apologetic that poses a theoretical question. What if words spoken by the court and reported by the press are not proven true? He says, while bizarrely juxtaposing Cooper's arrest with the indictment of Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Labor, the entire piece can only be described as a sordid attempt to defend Cooper and his ongoing legal troubles while painting a nearly romantic picture of the man. It's a really interesting and I think well-done article from Craig Monger. And it's, I think it's just something to keep in mind, just with Alabama Political Reporter.
No. You do need to keep that in mind. It's if you get money, you get advertising money from an entity that it can be in the news and your news agency. It's almost implied. I don't even think they've got to even tell you, hey, by the way, I mean, you're looking at your own coffers. You're looking at your own bank statements. You're thinking, we don't need that money to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do to keep that money coming in?
Right.
And so I think that the game doesn't really have to have words attached to it. It's pretty much this pretty well implied, or you would get it like, okay, we don't want to mess with him. And I way back, Dalton, think about this. When television news first became a thing, we're talking probably, if we're talking about the networks, it would probably be the late 50s or the early 60s for the nightly news. I remember that there was, at the time, now I wasn't watching in the news, you know, if I was...
waiting for sports.
I'm waiting on the Flintstones, man. But advertising and the news at one time was considered a no-go. You didn't have commercials in the middle of the news. Now look at all the Pfizer commercials, for instance.
That was the most notable during
COVID-19,
the pandemic.
Right? All that. I mean, advertising in the news did not, it was, they knew at the time before the money got so large, it was like, yeah, you can't do those two together. That does not work at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the way it goes, and you have to be careful where you're getting your news, who those advertisers are, and what role they play in the editorial content of that news.
Yeah, and you know, also, we're talking about these media outlets, but how about our state government putting this kind of money into advertising?
Mm-hmm.
It's taxpayer money, really,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what kind of checks and balances are there on that? I mean, I doubt they're outright saying, hey, how about we send you this and you don't write this article? It's probably something that's left unsaid.
Right.
But still, you think about it, it's taxpayer money flowing to companies who are providing slanted, if any, coverage on what's actually going on in the state.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger problem than the media companies that are taking that money and not writing about it.
We have advertisers, but we don't have a bunch of state agencies, right? So there's the difference.
Well, and I think that's where you learn the character of a columnist or a broadcaster is if there is a big story, and we saw it with COVID, just like you said, are you going to keep that journalistic integrity and do what you have to do? Well, we know far too many people don't do that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 822, your thoughts on the text line, 251-343-0106, or you can give us a call. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. I saw an article written back in the late 90s, and it talks about 20, 25 years ago, there was no network news business. The three big networks at that time, they were satisfied by putting news on for the prestige of that it would bring the network. Like, not only they made money on the entertainment shows, they didn't try to make money on the news.
Yeah.
And then that all changed at some point. Might have been the early 80s, might have been the advent of CNN and cable news.
Yeah.
But early on, networks were not trying to capitalize, money-wise, capital, on their network news. What they were trying to do was present the news and be seen in a certain light. Like, this is a intelligent, important network that's doing us a solid by giving us the news every night. So it wasn't in any way advertisers, but didn't blatantly affect the editorial shadow of the newscast.
Yeah, and you know, also on a larger scale, when you have incredibly rich people or corporations that buy the media outlet itself, whether it's Bezos with Washington Post, or I mean Elon buying Twitter and turn it into X. That is a major mode of news media.
Yep.
And it's just it's something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, and some of the broadcast companies are kind of, let it be known, they have a political view. They have it in, and they will implant some of these things in the news itself.
Right. Gene says, how much money has gone to Yellowhammer News? It says 1819 is half of 106.5 coverage. Is that okay? I don't know if it's, well, I guess with Jeff being an editor, but if news came out that 1819 was being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and it was obvious that their coverage shifted, then yeah, I would have a problem with it, and we would probably call it out right here on Mobile Mornings.
We would be a story.
Yellowhammer, I do remember they were a pretty big part of that Matrix LLC lawsuit where Alabama Power was paying, I think it was nearly $1 million to several organizations across the state to get better coverage.
Yep.
It's just happening in a lot of different places. John says, Bill Britt and Josh Moon, you're really messing up my coffee. King of all unnamed texters, the woke separatists should just have a Miss plus sized America. Joshua sounds like a movie there, talking about the Bubba Copeland story. And also Cheese Wagon keeping us updated on the traffic, 18-wheeler cleared off of the Bayway. So keep those texts coming, 251-343-0106. Coming up next, we have Rob Holbert with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, and a lot to get into with him. And he's covered things like this over the years as well.
He's been right closely in the middle of that Matrix story. He wrote that long article a couple of months back that gave me the chills. I couldn't read to the end of the story. I was like, I'm out of here.
Right, yeah. And Sean
says more about me than anything.
Sean from Baldwin County says, who even reads anything Bill or Susan Britt or Josh Moon write?
That's what I'm wondering is, are they spending their money wisely? I mean,
the state
political reporter. I mean, who immerses themselves in that daily?
Me, but who is not working in media and not reading? I don't know. I don't know how many people read that every day.
Yeah, I mean, AL.com seems like that'd be a good target.
Right.
It's 8:30 now. It's Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, and really, really glad to have you along on this Thursday morning. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, and 8:35, Thursday morning. The week is rushing on by, like they all seem to do, right?
They sure do.
I mean, it's Monday and then it's Thursday. It's like, what happened? There's some days in between, right?
Yeah, a lot of work happened is what happened.
A lot of work did happen, and sometimes we stay so immersed in the work, we don't realize the days are going on by. They also do that at Lanyap Mobile, where Rob Hulbert is the founder and editor and joins us again this morning. Always good to have you, Rob. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Y'all doing all right?
Yes, sir.
We're doing great, and a lot to talk about at this week's issue, including, of course, another city council meeting with a lot of information, and you guys cover it about as well, better than anyone. And looking at the cover story this week, and we don't have to go too in-depth in this because we do want to get to the mayor and the business chamber and everything, but one of Dan and I's favorite things to talk about, Moneyball, NCAA settlement, and the NIL could alter the college athletics landscape, and Brady Petrie with a great article on that. And, yeah, I don't think college football or any other college sport is going to look the same that it did as we keep moving further and further into this new era.
Yeah, well, you've got a $2.8 billion settlement for players that played from 2016 until, what, I guess 2020 or something. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's about 14,000 players who can get payments out of this. And, you know, how it's going to break down, that's the hard part, because, you know, I think it's probably going to be divvied up among players who, you know, people who could have made more money back then are going to get paid more, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So,
yep.
You know, it's not like it's not like everybody's going to get $200,000 across 10 years. But also, the big thing is, you know, it's not just the NCAA paying this. This is coming from schools themselves. So, you know, for big universities like Alabama and Auburn, that could be tens of millions of dollars in payments. You know, there's, and even at South, you know, which doesn't have as much in that way, but I mean, it's still, you know, they're looking at $500,000 to $250,000 a year that they're going to have to deal with, and that's a chunk out of the budget, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a chunk out of, and I know that's one case right there, Rob, but just looking forward with the NIL, I think these universities, these athletic departments, and maybe, you know, this neck of the woods, basically talking about the football team, they're going to have to change their strategy in terms of fundraising and where that money's going to go. And it used to always be the latest and the greatest in the third deck at the stadium and the best. Well, Auburn did pay for that big scoreboard, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is going to become secondary to just making sure that money is raised where you're in the race to recruit and then retain the best football players possible.
Yeah, I think that's true, and you know, you also have some questions about the NIL money at this point too, because they've been using these collectives, which are 501c3 organizations, to raise money for NIL, name, image, likeness money they're paying to athletes. The IRS has come down and said, "Hey, you know, these are charitable. This 501c3 is a charitable foundation." That's not charity, mm-hmm. Giving money to sports,
right.
to paying athletes. That's not charity. So there's some issues there as well. That, you know, are some of those collectives that they put together going to even survive? There's a lot of stuff that's up in the air with it.
Yeah, and so much of this money's coming from the big donors who would normally be chipping in to build another section of seats or mm-hmm. another video board. But, and I heard Hugh Freeze talking about it with Paul Feinbaum. He said a lot of these big donors, just a few years in, are about tapped out on this whole NIL thing. They're paying for these players, and a lot of them leave just a year in, and it's creating all kinds of issues. But
you have to have some sort of I don't know, because then it's an employee, but you got to have a contract with somebody where he doesn't like leave to go to Texas out of the blue, you know?
Right.
I don't know what those agreements look like. Rob, I tell you, and also Dalton, I think you'll both get a kick out of this, but years ago when I was in Athens, Georgia, I remember going to, it was a press conference for Dominique Wilkins to say that he was returning to the University of Georgia, and he came to the press conference in a brand new Trans Am. So it's kind of like you're not even trying to hide it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's back in the day.
People should read the cover story this week. Brady Petrie, they're talking about NIL. All right, let's get to the latest in the subpoenas. You got this law firm who is looking into the allegations that former Chief Prine has made against members of the mayor's administration. And Tuesday was another interesting council meeting, and I know Dale Leash was there. But another player kind of getting involved here, the business chamber, who said, hey, we don't think that this is the best use of everyone's time and money. It's going to take too long to get through this investigation. But they said it wasn't necessarily a directive from the business chamber, just concerned citizens.
Oh, and it had alerted the chambers, I think the way they put it. Like, oh, well, we got a tap on the shoulder, like, from business people, mm-hmm. partners who are chamber members, and said, hey, we got to look into this. And so, you know, how true all that is, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I will say, you know, so you had business people down there. You had Bradley Byrne, the head of the Chamber of Commerce. You had, you know, a bunch of people from the chamber down there. You had somebody from Airbus. Suddenly, you know, this thing, the quote-unquote business community is telling the city council not to extend subpoena power to the special counsel that is looking into this, which I don't think went over well with several members of the city council who mm-hmm. felt like they'd been bombarded with phone calls and all that. But, you know, we asked people in the chamber, is this a chamber initiative? They said, no, it's not us. It's just kind of this grassroots thing that popped up. And then about an hour later, we got somebody sent us the email from the chamber that was organizing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't look like it was this, you know, organic thing that popped up from the business community. And I mean, it's this concept that, you know, saying, well, this is going to hurt business in Mobile and at this critical juncture. And I'm like, you know, what does that even mean? I don't know what that means. I mean, to me, I look at it and say, you know, the chamber, these guys are way out of their lane on this thing. I mean, I feel like there's just a lot of effort to sort of stop this from happening. Mm-hmm. And the city council has the authority to do this. And, you know, they ought to be able to look at what went on without all this pressure to, yep. to not to do it. I mean, this, you know, something is going to happen to the city if we look into this. Doesn't make me feel like there's nothing there.
Sure.
I know what people behave like when there's something to hide, and this doesn't look like there's nothing to hide. I mean, when you start doing this stuff, and I'm not saying the city organized this, but I'm just saying it does. I don't think it's very helpful to the process.
Yeah, and I think you quoted
Carroll?
Yeah, Carroll said I've been bombarded. He was mad. He was like, "Look, I've been bombarded with all this pressure here in the last couple of days or a week or whatever," and he was pretty ticked off about it.
Yeah, I don't think they're happy about it because I don't think it's a very genuine program. I mean, I think the concept telling everybody that somehow this is going to hurt our local economy, that's a stretch, man. I mean, that is a big, big stretch. You know, what we're looking into is whether the chief of police, you know, what he's saying is accurate, and whether there was, you know, whether these, you know, the study that was done properly. Those are the kinds of things that are going on. That's not going to stop business in Mobile. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just trying to find out if things are going right or wrong behind the scenes down at City Hall. And, you know, that the council has a duty to do that. I think they should be left to do their job. And, I mean, this is a 45-day investigation. I mean, it's going to be over next month.
Yeah.
This is kind of just, you know, they're acting like this is the end of the world. And I don't, it's just a very strange thing to have occur, I think.
Well, it could be the end of some people's world. And that might be the problem.
Possible, yeah, depending on what comes out there.
Well, I think that's, you know, I mean, it's hard not to feel that way when you start to see this amount of thrashing around and you know, well, we don't need this to happen. We don't, you know, why is, I don't know why this is of particular interest.
Yep, to the chamber.
The Chamber of Commerce, yep. Or anybody else. Okay. You know, at that point, I mean, this is what's underway. Let it happen. Mm-hmm. It's, you know,
Well, that's a 45-day period, which, like you said, it'll be here and gone in no time. We had a 60-day period, pause in the bridge construction or planning as they looked for some cost-cutting measures, and that 60 days ran up earlier this week, and they're looking now to maybe try to get about 49% of the funding for the entire project, which is now, they're saying, $3 to $3.5 billion estimated. Looking for a federal grant, and they're making it sound like it might be easy. I don't think it'll be that easy, but now you have the entire Alabama delegation, both Congress and Senate, who all signed on to the same letter to the Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, saying,
Dear Pete,
we need this. We're ready to go. Put us in that Transportation Act money, and they're making it sound like it might actually happen, but this is going to cause even a further delay as we wait for this.
Do you all remember those quaint days when the projected cost of this bridge was less than $1 billion?
Yeah. Yeah, Sean, I think he said $800 million yesterday as he was looking back at the past.
I think it was around $700 or $800 million was the first one. You know, like we're now to over $3 billion, which, you know, of course, by the time it's finished, probably be 5 or 6.
Oof.
The one thing that you can be sure of is every day. All the delay that happens just makes it more expensive.
Yep.
I think I've always been of the opinion that the federal government should pay for it. It's a federal road, but it certainly would be good if there's some of that. I think that this also will include some more loans possibly from the feds. It needs to get done, and it's not going to get done just continuously waiting around for funding.
You see the evidence right in front of your building, right? Government Street backed up. Every Thursday through the weekend, I guess. I don't know.
By this afternoon at 2:30 or 3, it will be slammed. It will be backed up past Broad Street.
Wow.
That will be how it is.
Well, I had dinner.
It's always that way.
I had dinner in Fairhope over the weekend and went by way of Bay Minette.
Yeah,
to get to Fairhope,
and
that was just damn lovely. I'll tell you.
On my way back from Daphne on Sunday, had to ride on up to the Africatown Bridge to get across because it was trouble both through the Bankhead and Wallace. And I thought this was an interesting card that the Alabama delegation pulled in that letter to Buttigieg. And I know you guys have written about the traffic, and it's usually big traffic, 18-wheelers. That goes right through Africatown because they have to take the Africatown Bridge. Can't go through the Bankhead, of course. They try. Can't go through the Bankhead.
Right.
And then it's too backed up in the Wallace sometimes. But that's kind of playing to the tune of what you'd think Buttigieg and some of the feds would pay attention to. Hey, you've got this disadvantaged community, and the way things are right now, there's people that get hit walking across the street, and they've got all this wear and tear because the big trucks are coming through there. I thought that was interesting they added that into the letter.
I mean, hazardous materials are supposed to go through across Africatown anyway. They're not supposed to go through the Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that as well. Yeah, I mean, this needs to get done. Maybe what we need to do is just ban all federal vehicles from going through either tunnel until they come up with
That's not a bad idea right there.
Yeah. Someone mentioned
toll. Any federal vehicle gets hit with a really massive toll, maybe like $1 billion toll.
you can pay us one way or pay us the other.
Or someone mentioned on midday yesterday, they said, hey, Amazon, all these delivery drivers have to use the bridge. What if they helped chip in? That make their ride a little faster on the way through. So a lot of people have a lot of ideas, and great riding this week.
I think everybody's going to be chipping in because there's going to be a toll. Going to be a toll. That's the big thing, is getting it retired so it doesn't go on and on and on for a million years. That's the that's hopefully what will happen.
I'm at the stage with the way my birthday cakes look these days where, is it going to be done in my lifetime? That's where I'm at, Rob, so pray for me.
You'll be going across it in a wheelchair, Dan. We're going to get there.
I'll push it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Good stuff in the latest issue of Lanyap. If folks want to find it on the streets or, better yet, subscribe online, how can they make that happen?
Yeah, if you want to come on over to Lanyap Mobile Daily, Lanyap Daily as we call it now, because it is a daily newspaper online, go to lanyapmobile.com. You can get signed up. It's $1 for the first month. And if you don't like it, you can cancel. It costs you $1 to try it out. But it's $6.50 a month after that, which is pretty inexpensive for news every day. So come check it out.
All right, Rob, thanks a bunch for your time, and we will talk again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Rob Hulbert, check it out, lanyapmobile.com. And we're coming back. More Mobile Mornings on the way. Shoot us a text, a phone call, 251-343-0106. We'll also let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Porsche Show, which begins here in just about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. 854 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Hey, outside the box, Father's Day idea. Yeah, yes. Father's Day is coming up Sunday,
yes.
In case you forgot. Get Dad a trip from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Have him come over to the house, maybe the business, and get rid of that junk that maybe Dad or the family have been storing up for years. And they have so many fantastic reviews left by local people who have used Trey Bennett services here in Mobile, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Here's one of the many. Let's see, Martha left this 5-star review. Just a month ago, said the two young men were wonderful, helpful, and polite. They quickly got things done. I was pleased and impressed with their work. And now, you might have noticed over the months here of me going through these reviews, the word polite is used
a lot
more than any business I've really seen.
You're right.
Next to maybe, I don't know, Chick-fil-A or some of these places. But
they're in your home or they're on your property.
Yeah.
So you notice the way that they treat you when they're at your place.
Yeah, and they act with that kind of respect every single time. Plus, they're great at what they do, and that's getting rid of the junk. They'll be in and out in no time. You can get on with your day. Plus, you call them, you'll get a free on-site estimate with all-inclusive pricing and no hidden fees. So set that appointment up today. It's very easy. You can do it through the phone. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number, or you can set your appointment up online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Jeff Porsche Show on the way. He's got House Speaker Nathaniel Ledbetter in the first hour. Also, Alabama Today's April Marie Fogel, and he wraps it up 11:35 with State Senator Gudger, who you had some quotes from him yesterday speaking at a women's conference.
It was earlier this week at the Coleman County Republican Women's Conference, and he was just talking about he thinks the gambling legislation will be back next year, and everyone's trying to guess whether or not it'll return anytime soon after the close failure, but failure nonetheless, one vote short in the Senate this year. So it'll be interesting to hear Gudger with Jeff asking him the questions there in that 11 o'clock hour. One of my favorite things that comes out every year, and I guess I need to find out how to actually order the book, but government pork barrel projects, you know, the things that, well, Richard Shelby was really well known for being a master of this.
Yep.
But the annual Congressional Pig Book came out this week featuring members from both chambers of Congress and both major parties who the Citizens Against Government Waste say are responsible for spending earmarks which direct federal funds to pet projects in their home districts and states. This past year, the Citizens Against Government Waste found over 8,000 earmarks totaling nearly $23 billion in pork projects. And they laid some of these out, and they give different awards to different politicians.
Yeah, right.
They said the Whole Hog Award this year goes to Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins. She had the highest amount of earmarks, 231, totaling over $575 million.
Hmm.
For what they call pet projects.
Bringing money home is the main thing.
I don't know
you have that many needs in Maine.
Yeah, or for whoever's paying Susan Collins in other states. Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand from New York got the You Cannot Be Serious Award. They were called out by the group for their $1.75 million earmark for the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. The Singing a Sour Note for Taxpayers Award goes to Vermont Senators Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont and Susan Collins, they received that award due to their earmarks for the opera houses in their respective states, totaling $739,000. Keep in mind, through all of this, we're looking for money for the bridge, the I-10 bridge.
Yeah, with the Dear Peter letter. Yeah. So anybody notable there, like any of the big stars of Congress or the Senate that made that list, like any of the people who are in the middle of the news all the time?
I need the whole book. I'm just, let's see. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith from Mississippi was found to be fiscally unfit for a $500,000 earmark she received for the restoration of a historic gem in Madison, Mississippi. Murkowski in Alaska was given the Krabby Pork Award, $4 million for the Alaska King Crab Enhancement Project. Now we need to. I'm going to buy this book, and we'll have it at the station so we can reference it when we talk about big money for our projects.
We can talk about that every day, right? It is 8:59 with Dan and Dalton.
Family-owned Azalea Coffee Service has proudly been keeping the hardworking folks of Mobile, Baldwin, Washington, and Clark counties going for over 30 years. Small enough to take care of you individually, big enough to take care of everyone. Azalea Coffee Service offers both national and private label brands so you can have your favorite cup of coffee every morning. To qualify for a free month of coffee service, call Wayne at 675-9178 and tell him you heard it on FM Talk 106.5. Azalea Coffee Service. Call 675-9178 now.